the walls in that room looked like they were on fire. Oh. And then I saw little kittens all around my bed. Kittens with human faces on them.
That sounds scary, actually. I think if I saw felt kittens, terrified.
Hallucinations, I don't
yeah.
love.
Yeah. I don't.
How old were your kids at this age? Is this stage, by the way?
Five and four.
Oh, my God.
Across the chair, I could see the mirror or window through to the other patient. The other patient had my gown on. I was like, oh, that's normal. I was checking my iPhone. He was checking his phone. Then I was moving my neck. He was moving his neck. And I was like, okay. And then all of a sudden, I had something in my eye. So I was doing this with my eye. And he was doing that. So I was like messaging my husband. I was like, something's really weird. And I feel scared and terrified. And I feel like the nurses are trying to, like, they hate me because of my behavior. I'm a bad patient. And so I was like, please come, like, right away. And then my heart was going faster and faster because I felt terror.
Yeah.
And I finally went to the bed. And then he came and he was talking to the head nurse. And as he was doing that, I just like, oh, this is death. This is it. I'm done, you know. So I'm not Christian, but I looked up into the ceiling in my bed and I said, one thing, God, my kids. And yes. I clapped my hand and I passed out.
Hey, hey, and welcome to the 40s Formula, your go-to place for insightful discussions on navigating the 40s and thriving in this transformative decade.
We're your hosts, Jasmine and Amanda, two women that are passionate about exploring the challenges and adventures that come with turning 40 and what lies ahead. Dr. Sarah Nami-An is a UCLA-trained neuroscientist whose non-traditional path led her to enroll in the Fashion Institute of Design and Merchandising in Los Angeles and start her own label, Nami Design. Her ability to blend her scientific and artistic backgrounds, as well as handle the day-to-day challenges of running a startup, gave her resilient skills that became patently useful after a shocking double diagnosis of a brain tumor in 2018 and a spine tumor in 2023. Never one to be held back, Dr. An now considers herself a spiritual scientist and is constantly developing new skills, practices, and ways of designing a life that is present and purposeful. Well, we took notice of today's guest, Dr. Sarah Nami-An, when we saw an Instagram post for this pre-loved fashion sale that we're kind of obsessed with, and we thought her energy is such a good match for the 40s formula. But little did we know that behind this style maven was a fashion designer, a tumor survivor, a PhD neuroscientist, a serious triple threat, with a killer vibe. So we are happy to have you here to tell us about your wild journey.
That's so nice of you.
Well, it's all true, girl.
Thank you so much.
I mean, the top line in your Instagram
profile. I feel really seen.
Girl, we are seeing you. Thank you. Again, we don't have great eyesight. But I don't have great eyesight, but I can see you, okay? And the top line in your Instagram profile says, you know, brain tumor 18, you know, 2018, and spine tumor 2023. And, you know, you're not trying to hide the fact that you're an alumnus of these two really serious health scares. Can you tell us a little bit more about what women should know about tumors?
I realized that when I first got my tumor that I had to Google all these information about like brain tumors. I didn't know anything about it. No one talks about it. And realized that actually women get brain tumors more often than men. Mm-hmm. We get tendency to have more. It's like 3 to 1.
Wow, okay.
Just like cancer, we don't know how it happens or what occurs. A lot of people ask me, well, it's the good kind, right? And they call it the good kind.
Wow.
And I was like, and people do to that.
Is that benign?
Or, okay. And most tumors versus cancer are considered benign because the fact is because it doesn't
spread.
Metastasize. It doesn't spread. So the definition of cancer cells are usually that they spread, and that's the scary part because it's unpredictable. Tumors are just uncontrolled cell growth.
Okay.
And so tumors take a really long time to grow. Maybe you wouldn't even know that it started when you were like 15, and then you discover it finally at 35 because it took 20 years for the size to grow to impede something in your body for it to be symptomatic.
Okay.
So for me, my brain tumor in 2018, it grew the size of a golf ball, 5 centimeters here, 5 by 6 centimeters.
Oh my gosh.
And okay, so I'll tell this quick story. how I found it.
Yeah.
I just moved to Singapore and I was having headaches and I was nauseous. I took pregnancy tests every morning because I was like, am I pregnant?
Must be this, yeah.
But thank God they were always negative because this factory is closed.
Thank God it was just a tumor.
I know. And I really thought I had maybe vertigo. I was nauseous. One time I went to go get my daughter from the bus and I was holding her hand and I was walking back home. And the next thing I know, I'm in the bush.
Wow.
And then I woke up and I was like, and I dragged her with me because I was still holding her hand.
Yeah.
And this one lady actually came up and said, are you drunk? And I'm like, do I look drunk to you, lady? But anyway, so I had that happen. And finally, I went to the hospital so many times, like seeing ENT, seeing pain management, blah, blah, blah. Nothing happened. So I was like, finally, one day I went to the bathroom. In the morning, you take a poop, right? And what you do when you poop, you
strain.
And that strain probably brought pressure up into my head.
Oh my God.
And then when I tried to get up after I wiped to put my underwear up, I started falling.
Oh, my God.
I couldn't use my left leg. So then I ended up just hooking my arms onto the sink.
Yeah.
And I dangled there.
Oh my.
And in my mind, I didn't freak out. I just went to task mode.
Yeah.
I just said, because my husband, Dean, and my kids, he took them down to the bus to go to school.
Okay.
And we were at NUS Housing, so he would just walk straight to the office.
Yeah.
We didn't have a helper, so I'm home alone.
So you're alone.
So then I was like, where is my phone? It's by the bed. So in my mind, I was like, well, I have to army crawl to get it, to contact someone. So while I'm dangling, I was like, this is ridiculous. So I slowly put myself down, and then I'm vain. I was like, if the paramedics come, I don't want them to see my butt. So I wiggled into my underwear, even though I couldn't move my legs. And then the front door opened. Dean forgot his backpack that day.
Oh my God. That's like divine intervention right there,
yes.
Isn't it?
So then I yelled, Dean. And then he came running over. And okay, up until that point, my husband and I had a very bad relationship because I was not feeling well. I was yelling at him. I was expecting him to help me like quickly.
Yeah.
And he wasn't delivering to me in my expectations. Oh my gosh, my earring kept falling. And then, so I told him, you know, today is about me.
Yeah.
I've hit ground, like, you know, what is it? I hit rock bottom.
Yeah.
And like, take me to the hospital right now, the ER. And we didn't know what the number was. Here in the States, it's 911.
Yeah.
But here, it's actually 995.
Yeah.
Oh,
995. Yeah, 999 is like fire station,
yeah,
right?
I'm
and
the
995
sure.
is
yeah,
medical.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't. It's,
oh, wow.
So do not take advice from this podcast.
We have to Google.
Yeah. And I totally understand that because actually, I know in the UK, it's 999.
Yeah.
And I assumed it was the same here.
Because of the British system.
Yeah.
But wow, I did not realize. Yeah. 995 Singapore people.
Probably all of our kids know it, to be honest with you,
I think
right?
so, from but, maybe yeah. the yeah. school. Yeah, yeah. So he called the private one thinking that it'd be faster.
Yeah.
But they actually recommend that we do the government public. One, the public, the local one. So we did that and they came and brought us over there. I was in the stretcher and I was just talking like this and talking to them. So they were like, oh, let's just give her anti-nausea med and then send her back home.
Okay.
But our friend Rogoff, he's a gastro-oncologist and at NUH, so next to NUS. So they work in collaboration with Dean. So he was there and he was able to come to the back of the ER. So he was like, Sarah, you know, you've had so many symptoms. Let's just admit you and do all the tests.
Okay.
I was like, thank you, instead of going back and forth.
Yes.
So I was like, yeah, just admit me. So I got admitted. The next morning, went to the MRI to get my brain scanned. I got back up and there were 10 doctors in my room.
Oh.
They're Dean was staring at the corner, wasn't even looking at me. And then I saw a computer screen with my brain scan. And it was like, tuk, 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 like the layers from the top, bottom. Yeah. And I was like, I was nerding out with a PhD neuroscience. I'm like, oh, cool. That's my brain. That's so cool. My brain looks beautiful. And then towards the bottom, I was like, wait a second. Why does it look asymmetrical?
Wow.
And then I was like, huh, okay. And then they were like, oh, it's a meningioma. Okay. As a neuroscientist, I don't know what the meningioma meant. So at that time, I thought it was cancer, but I just went with it.
Yeah.
And so it's just overgrowth of cells that are on top of the sheath, meninges of the brain. And it can happen to a lot of women, but different locations.
Okay.
Thankfully, mine was actually just right here. Mm. And that's why the scar is right here. Actually, my hair after surgery looked exactly the same. Because yeah. I was already like this. You guys can just shave it off. But they're like, yeah, it's fine. Like they were able to just
really
do it here.
We only need this side.
I had emergency surgery the next day because 2 years prior, after giving birth to my daughter, I didn't feel very good. So at UCLA, I got like the $1 million checkup. Mm-hmm. So I had brain MRI from there and had nothing. So that was 2 years ago.
What?
So I had something at least to compare with. So from 2 years ago to now, it was like a golf ball size. Like, how did it grow so fast? Wow. So tumors are, so cancer is, what is it? It's stages.
Okay.
Stage one through four, depending on how severe it is. For tumors, it's actually grade one through three. Okay. One and two are called benign. They're very slow growing. They will not spread. It causes very little symptoms, and usually it's called wait and watch. So people don't do anything. They don't do surgery. They don't do any treatments. You just wait to see if it grows and just monitor it. Grade three is what I had.
Okay.
And it's because purely it's speed of growth, and it's called malignant because of the symptoms and the disability it can cause.
Okay.
I went in for surgery 3 hours later, very, very fast. I got to the ICU. I was intubated, but they took it out. So I was the only one awake in the ICU. And I got the VIP treatment of one-on-one treatment with that because I know Dean, or Dean knows the people there. And so I kind of pissed off the nurses because she was poking my veins and kept missing.
Oh.
It was so painful.
One of my husband's pet peeves as well.
Oh, really?
Incompetent.
And back then I was quite a harsh person. I have a lot of anger. And then at the time too, I had tubes sticking out of my head for fluids and all this stuff is happening. And so I was like, what the fuck, bitch? Like, get it right or find someone else to do it. And then so another nurse came and she looked at me and and it's very sternly. And she said, look, you have small veins, ma'am. And I go, I've never had anyone tell me this before. Anyway, so I thought that there was a conspiracy for the nurses to all hate me and want to kill me.
In retrospect, do you have small veins?
No, I don't.
Okay, just checking.
I don't think I do.
Just checking on the factuality.
Like in the States, I've never had anyone have trouble.
I've had people say it to me, and then I was like, use it. What is it called? A butterfly needle?
There's
a particular needle, which is thinner, right?
Yeah,
you can use. So.
And then it draws out blood. Yeah. And I like looking at the needles.
It's also prettier.
Yeah, you said that. I can't. I'm like, I hate needles. I hate injections. Yeah. I hate blood.
I'm all right with needles. They're all right.
definitely not pre-med for you. So then I went from ICU, which was a crazy experience. And then I went down to the high dependency ward. And then in the walls were on fire. So obviously I'm on fentanyl.
Yeah.
I have a lot of things going on. Fentanyl, I didn't realize was such a powerful and scary drug. But girl, I was not in pain. I was good.
It was doing its job, is what
you're
saying.
Yeah, it was doing its job. The walls in that room looked like they were on fire. Oh, and then I saw little kittens all around my bed. Kittens with human faces on them.
That sounds scary, actually. I think if I
felt kids, terrified.
Hallucinations I don't
yeah.
love.
Yeah, I don't
How old were your kids at this stage, by the way?
Five and four.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Across the chair, I could see the mirror, our window through to the other patient. The other patient had my gown on. I was like, oh, that's normal. I was checking my iPhone. He was checking his phone. Then I was moving my neck. He was moving his neck. And I was like, okay. And then all of a sudden, I had something in my eye, so I was doing this with my eye, and he was doing that. So I was messaging my husband. I was like, something's really weird. And I feel scared and terrified. And I feel like the nurses are trying to they hate me because of my behavior. I'm a bad patient. And so I was like, please come right away. And then my heart was going faster and faster because I felt terror.
Yeah.
And I finally went to the bed. And then he came and he was talking to the head nurse. And as he was doing that, I just this is death. This is it. I'm done, you know? So I'm not Christian, but I looked up into the ceiling in my bed and I said, one thing, God, my kids. And I clapped my hand and I passed out. Mm. And hours later, I came to, and then my room was bright, like white. None of the lights were on. The windows really weren't showing that much light, but my room was really bright. Like everything was gone. Mm. And then at the base of my bed, were two gigantic angels.
Oh, wow.
And it's not anything that I could have made up because I thought angels looked like those Cupids, like Valentine Cupids, you know. But these were white marble. I can only see the back of them. Two gigantic wings. Their heads almost hit the ceiling. And I imagined if their wings were open, it would crush the whole room.
Wow.
Like, and protect me.
Yeah. I'm getting goosebumps now hearing this description. It's like.
And the marble looked a little like battled, I mean, like damaged. So you could see a little bit of like gray bits that were chunks of broken off. Mm. And I got this sense, they didn't talk to me. They just, I just got the sense that they were bored. They're there every day, but they just, I just happened to see them that day. And then I was like, thank you. And I passed out again. And this time I saw unicorns flying around, and I was decorating rainbow cookies because I love decorating desserts. So anyway, so that's my hospital story. And then I had 33 sessions of radiation after that. And that one's crazy too. Like, you know, Chucky mask.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
You're like this onto a metal bed. Oh. So your head doesn't move. So the laser can go precisely where it needs to be.
Oh my God.
And so I had 33 sessions of that. Oh. And there's different types of radiation too, if viewers want to ask later, because there are options and they're different. And as a PhD, I guess I can be nerdy and really explain it to you.
Yeah.
And because people are scared, you know, they don't know what they're supposed to do, what their options are and what's best for them, you know. So for me, I had the option of doing gamma knife, which is one time, but extra strong and specifically in one spot. But we decided to do the carpet bond situation with our method, which is like 33 sessions, but it takes all the margins.
Oh, interesting.
So the problem with cancer and tumors that when you do resurgery is that how much are you allowed to take out without damaging the healthy cells?
Yes, correct.
And microscopically, you can't see it.
Yeah.
So radiation has to come in to get the little bits that are left over, that are possibly left over.
Yeah.
And then you have chemo, but I didn't have to do chemo, thank God.
Yeah.
So tumors for us, we don't have the chemo protocol yet.
Okay.
For me, I'm glad, but I'm sure some people want it.
Amanda, I feel the older we get, the more important protein is. But the thing is, not many women are eating enough.
Absolutely. And you know, protein isn't just for muscles. It helps with hormones, metabolism, staying full longer. And don't just guess, make quality protein a priority.
And that's why we trust the Meat Club. They deliver ethically sourced meats directly to you. You can get grass-fed beef, organic chicken, wild-caught seafood that is nutrient-dense and packed full of the good stuff.
And here's the fun part. We want to see what you're cooking. Show us your creations and tag at the 40s Formula and at the Meat Club SG so that you have a chance to win $250 in the Meat Club goodies.
Entries will close on the 5th of June and the winner will be announced on the first episode of season 6. So come on, guys, get cooking. And if you haven't already used the Meat Club, you can. And you can save yourself $12 off by using code TFF12.
Head over to themeatclub.com.sg, get cooking, and who knows, you could even get $250 off your next shop. I have to ask then, so you go through this brain tumor, you go through the radiation, and you think, that's it, I'm done, all set. Mm-hmm. That has to be my health scare for my lifetime.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then it's 2023.
Yeah.
Can you talk us through that process?
I was fine after the brain tumor. Honestly, I was a rich tai-tai.
Okay. I wish I could be a rich
for our American listeners, that basically means like, you know, Real Housewives of Singapore.
Okay. Yeah, so we can just chill and ladies of lunch and leisure. And like, so I read books. I didn't exercise. I didn't eat healthy. I just gave myself permission to retire at the age of 39 at the time.
Okay.
Then I started getting headaches.
Mm.
That didn't seem to be related to my brain tumor at all.
Okay. So there were different headaches.
Yeah. So this was like, I don't know, it's like tension. It was in my neck and shoulder. And then I had that starting like 2020, just after COVID.
Mm.
It brought me to a very, very dark place. Okay. I had this every single day from the moment I wake up to the moment I sleep. Nice. And I still have it right now. So as I'm talking to you, I have a headache.
Oh.
And so I ran all over Singapore looking for something. So it brought me to TCM, which was the first natural thing. The Western medicine, I got steroid injections into my neck. Wow. It didn't work.
Okay.
It just gave me pimples. I got Botox injected into my face.
Oh, yeah, to relax the...
But it didn't really work. Yeah. I thought it would help my face, but it really didn't because it was insurance covered.
Yeah.
And then I went into like bio resonance. I did TRE, which is trauma release exercise. Wow. I did Rolfing. I've done
Rolfing.
Rolfing is fascia.
Oh yes, okay, so, yeah.
Fascial therapy. Yes.
Okay.
Everything in our body is connected by fascia. It looks like spider webs. Mm-hmm. So one part's tight. If you release it, then the pain will go away in the other parts.
How do they actually, is it like with rolling?
There's different methods. Yeah. It's called Rolfing initially because of Dr. Rolf.
Okay.
And she discovered that the fascia, if you move a certain way or you pull the skin away from the...
It sounds a little painful.
Yeah. But afterwards, you feel amazing because you feel loose.
A lot of high-level tennis players use it.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Because it can like basically... Yeah, it makes you loose and it prevents injury.
Yes. Yeah. It makes you more flexible and like less tight. So
maybe I need to try this.
Yeah. There's plenty actually. So I realized there's everything simple. Yeah. So I looked at Vipassana.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Which is a 10-day silent meditation that exists here
Yes, it was
one of our guests.
Oh, really?
The guy who owns Grain Traders. We're giving a free plug to Grain Traders now. Yeah.
Thanks, Grain Traders.
Yeah, he went on a 10-day silent retreat.
Yeah.
And I can imagine that could be so tough.
Yeah.
So tough.
No, I really wanted to do it. Looking at all these different modalities, I finally came upon energy healing.
Okay.
I was at a high school in Korea on the military base, the American school. And he brought me to this energy place. And the Korean energy is, well, it's called ki. In Chinese, it's qi. In Sanskrit, it's called prana. In Hawaiian, it's called mana. So there's a lot of words for energy in different languages, culture. So then I went to this place here called Center for Inner Studies. And pranic healing is what I studied. Initially, you go to a Tuesday, every Tuesday night, there's a little introductory like lecture. And then a free session of pranic healing from one of the volunteers. So I learned all the classes.
Incredible.
Because I wanted to heal myself. So my motivation was myself. Yeah. But in the process, I got to understand the spiritual side, and that as a scientist, I was very skeptical, right? As scientists, we can be very arrogant and only believe in our five senses. Mm-hmm. What can we prove with our five senses? Mm. But there's a lot more. And once you can feel the energy in your hands, which I learned at 16, and I've always felt it since I'm now 45, I decided this is going to be what I want to do is that I really want to explain the spiritual like modalities in a science term that people will then understand and give it a try.
Yeah.
Because it's free.
Yeah.
What's a mantra? Our voice. This is a voice box that we're an instrument that we have, and it's free. All those modalities, I was chasing all that, and I got really depressed, to be honest, because nothing worked. And
you're really still chasing this just for pain management, more or less.
It is pain management. So other people have emotional pain or mental pain. I have physical pain. Yeah. The universe is showing it to me that this is what I need to work on. So then 2022, I decided to go to the States to try some shrooms.
I thought you said to experience some modalities. Well, that's one of them.
I feel like I was listening to something yesterday. Mm-hmm. I can't remember which podcast it was, but they are actually talking about
legalizing shrooms?
Psychedelics.
No, psychedelics and all this stuff for pain management. It is. And all of.
So there is a new movement where psychedelics are microdosed, like LSD, and they're monitored.
MDMA.
And they have a bad rap from the 60s and because they were abused and whatever. But to be honest, they can actually really help you with your pain. Mm. Everything, pain is a perception in your brain, right? And if these psychedelics are affecting your brain, it can, at least for the meantime, help you get to a point where you get some guidance to help sustain and maintain your pain management.
Okay, I do have to ask though. Yeah. So you're exploring all these modalities and doing all these things, and then you tell Dean and the kids.
Oh, no, I don't tell the kids that.
Okay, because you're like, yo, here's the next step. So mommy's just going to, mommy's just going to fly to the U.S., grab some shrooms. I'll be back in a hot sec. like how did you navigate, kind of that with your life?
It was about 2 years of pain at that point, and I was desperate. Yeah. I'm in despair. And when you're in despair, like, you're
nothing sounds absurd, right?
Yeah. I was suicidal. I was in so much pain right here. I imagine just bashing my head into the wall and ending it all.
Yeah.
And then I believe in reincarnation, think, okay, I'm gonna just start over.
Yeah.
But then I was like, okay, well, if I'm at this state, I wrote letters to my husband and my kids.
Wow.
You know, I was ready.
Yeah.
I was like, well, then maybe I should just take this trip without the kids to go to the States and try everything I can, you know, to see if anything can help. So my friend there just happened to be very into the microdosing. Mm. So he offered to be my trip sitter. Mm. And so I sat in his guest room and I hugged the pillow and I put a nightshade on and I had a terrible trip.
Oh.
But in hindsight, I got very good messages from it.
Okay.
Very clear. Initially, I thought I was going through a haunted house. Okay. The music in my ear started being like, wah, wah, you know, those like Halloween music, eerie. I was going up a wooden, creaky wooden Halloween, like haunted house.
Okay.
And then it went on forever. My pain in my body like exponentially increased.
Wow, oh my God. Okay.
And then I switched to Korean. So my friend who is white, Caucasian, he was like trying to help me. He's like, Sarah, I don't know what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like in Korean going, Abuji, Abuji, I can't do it.
Yeah.
No one deal. And he's like, what are you doing? I can't help you.
So while you're going through this trip, do you know that? Is it almost like a lucid dream where you kind of know that this is happening?
Yes.
But there's nothing but you can do.
There's nothing you can control.
But you're aware of what it is.
You are.
But it just feels very real.
Yeah, it feels very real.
And the only reason I'm bringing this up is because actually the other night I was having a lucid dream.
Oh, very good.
I felt like my mouth was taped and I was being held captive. Mm-hmm. And somebody was like poking their nails, like long nails, into my hand. And I'm shouting, you fucking bitch. But because my mouth was taped, I'm going, you fucking bitch, you fucking bitch.
Uh-huh.
And my husband in real life next to me was like, and then I realized what I was doing. And I knew at the time I was dreaming.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next morning I asked him and he was like, you were singing. I was like, I wasn't singing. I was saying, you fucking bitch.
Yeah. Oh, crazy though.
So weird.
Yeah.
But I knew in my dream it was a dream. But I was almost
paralyzed dreaming.
And I couldn't move.
Yes.
And that's what it feels like, does it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I guess the thought of being in like a scary situation like
is... Like, and I tell people I don't have a lot of fears.
Yeah.
I don't fear that thing. I just jump into whatever.
Yeah.
But I felt true terror.
Wow.
And then at that point, I was like, oh, simple. To get out of this pain, I can just kill myself. But then,
and that's during the trip.
Yeah,
in the
shrimp trip.
Your friend that was there, were you aware? Like, can you see him, or he's just not? So you
I
don't
couldn't
even.
See him.
Okay.
Okay. So
I mean, I can hear him if he talks to me, but
you can't.
But
so,
it's not.
So,
I have
so
a
what does
eye
that
shade.
Feel like for you then? Oh, obviously,
it's just
shade.
You're just in your head. Like you're seeing these images. You feel whatever the sensation is.
Yeah.
So at the time, I felt excruciating pain, and then so I told myself like I can end it by killing myself. But this voice then came and said, "No, Sarah.
Okay.
This is eternal." And that despair of no way out, that got me to such the darkest place I've ever thought I could be in. And then another voice came in, and it was Mother Earth. I know this sounds really strange, but honestly, it was a female voice. And she said, the mountain pain you're in is the mountain pain I'm in.
Mm.
And I was like, oh, okay. She's like, help me. And I was like, how? I want to. I was born on April 22nd, which is International
Earth Day.
Yeah. And so I do feel compelled to help somehow. I just don't know how. And I said, please give me some reprieve so I can help you. Because right now I'm just laying in bed all day. Mm-hmm. And she only says, be loud. And I said, how? And then she disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
And in my mind, I was thinking, be loud. Okay, I am vocal. I do express myself a lot. But like maybe Instagram, I don't know, you know? I finally put it up. I looked at the wall. It was like, wong, like rainbow. It's like, wong, wong. And I stumbled over to the bathroom, peed, got up. And I was washing my hands. And the window is sun coming through it. And it was bright. And I was like, what the hell? How long has it been? And then I was like, and then it sounds really cheesy. But at that exact moment, like I said, when you're in the darkest place on earth, just seek the light.
Mm-hmm.
Not just the light, it's the act of seeking for it. Mm-hmm. When you're in the dark, all you want to do is lay down.
Mm-hmm.
You want to have a self-pity party.
Yeah.
It's very hard when you're in a dark place and you're depressed, despair, and you feel like there's no answers and no one to help you.
Yeah.
You just want to lie down. But if you want to get out of it and you feel like that's what you want to do, you want to make the effort, then remember to seek the light.
Yeah.
And people ask me, what's the light? I'm like, well, physical light, easy, the sun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or you write happy memories.
Yeah.
Some things that bring you joy.
Yeah.
there's actually a chart by Dr. Joe Dispenza that I love because as a scientist, he measured the frequency or the vibration of each emotion. So at the top, you have bliss, which is very hard to get to actually, yeah. unless you're eating like an amazing like crispy cream donut or something. I don't know. or like, you know, yeah. orgasms, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, there could be other ways.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it's not as very frequent, but that's the highest vibration. Okay. And then there's joy, gratitude, love, you know. And at the bottom, you have guilt, mm-hmm. revenge.
Despair.
Yes. Yeah. To be honest, when you meditate and you bring your vibration up towards those higher vibrations, your cells and your body, so as a scientist now, mm-hmm. your cells and your body, they vibrate optimally at those higher vibrations. Mm-hmm. If they're at the low vibration, it's chaotic. It goes kung. Yeah. So if you want that kind of proof yeah. to motivate you to meditate. And so one more thing is the earth vibrates at 7.83 hertz. Okay. It's called the Schumann's resonance.
Okay.
This is the science part of me.
Yeah.
And the average vibration of a human body is 5 hertz. If we meditate and bring the vibration up to be more congruent with earth, don't we want to vibrate with earth like in synchrony? So it brings our health to an optimal state.
I have to say, something that my husband has said, so we work in health practice, uh-huh. and something that we always say to our patients when they're like, this is so hard, it's so complicated, there's so many moving parts. Mm-hmm. We're like, think of just being an optimal human.
Yes.
Meaning go outside when it's light mm-hmm. and go to sleep when it's dark.
Yes.
Yeah.
Eat an Simple. Omnivorous diet mm-hmm. that matches the energy that you need to fuel your day. Mm-hmm. Like it is actually not that complicated. If you can just be more human, mm-hmm. it actually pays off in spades. And yeah. I think that's very similar to what you're talking about.
And I think right now we're at the age where there's so much shared online mm-hmm. that and so mm-hmm. much content.
Clutter.
You don't know who to believe Correct. And yeah. who to follow. And even me, like, I don't know, the listeners, like, I'm not an expert. I'm mm-hmm. just sharing my experience. Mm-hmm. If it works for you, great. And in the future, I'm only explaining what the spiritual different modalities are and scientifically
yeah.
so that maybe you'll try because maybe it'll make sense to you.
Yeah, like, exactly. Why does, maybe this is the way that yeah, you'll find the
like,
path,
why
right?
does certain way of breathing help yeah. your body? It's like, duh, we breathe. No, but actually there's different methods yeah, that will yeah. actually encourage different energy and vibrations in our body.
What's your thoughts on then things like grounding? Can that sort of like going outside yes. with barefooted, can that help, you know, bring you back to?
I walk around my condo barefoot everywhere. We live near Holland Village and I can walk to Holland Village and I walk barefoot there.
I'm going to keep an eye out for you.
Well, always in Holland Village.
I think if you ask the people around there, they're like, oh yeah, that's a barefoot girl.
That's the crazy lady.
Yeah, yeah. Especially in the rain, I walk barefoot because I feel like I trust my feet yeah. more than my shoes.
Oh, I totally understand. It's weird because one day my husband and I were like, we're going to do some grounding. We're going to wake up early. We're going to go out for a walk, but we're not going to wear our shoes. Mm-hmm. I was a little bit self-conscious. I was like, fuck, we're gonna be walking outside with no shoes on. We did it. Ended up in a park and we were like, right, what do we do now? And he's like, do you want to hug a tree? I'm like,
oh, really? Your husband and I will get along. I'm a tree hugger.
I mean, he said to me, do you want to hug a tree? And I was like, do I want to hug a tree? I'm gonna be like some kind of weirdo hippie. Like,
yeah.
But then we just sat by the tree mm-hmm. instead. Yeah. But we did it once. We got home, our feet were so filthy and it was like, fuck, clean them before you get inside.
Yeah.
So honestly, the grounding is the best for clearing your chakras, your energy centers. So over time now with practicing, I can see people's auras.
Wow.
Auras are just energy fields.
Can you see ours?
I can see yours and yours. Yes.
I hope it's not as black as my soul.
No, no.
I'm kidding.
If you do see black, it means that area is diseased.
Oh,
Yeah. And so one time in Venice Beach, like a long time ago before kids, mm-hmm. I was walking to a hair appointment and this random guy ran up to me and he's like, your back is black.
Oh my God.
And he's like, let me help you. And I was like, no, dude, I don't know who you are. So
what
I kept walking.
What year was that?
It was like 2010.
Oh, wow. So before any of the tumors.
I was before kids. Yeah. It was like a long time ago. I had back pain. Now I know as a person of energy and I understand what each chakra and what it means. I was very like confused about my career. Mm. It was just before I switched to fashion.
Yeah.
And that area is your root chakra, which is your sense of like security and sense of survival. and financial security. Yeah. So it makes sense now.
Can we talk about the switch to fashion? Because how intimidating it is to be a woman in science, right? Achieving the level of PhD at one of the most prestigious institutions in the United States. Mm-hmm. And then to say, actually, plot twist, I'm going to go to FITM with the 19-year-olds and study. And FITM, by the way, is the Fashion Institute of Design and Merchandising. It's a highly prestigious fashion institute in Los Angeles. And say, I'm going to do fashion design. And again, you know, there's the whole trope about like disappointing your Asian parents. And you can touch on that if you'd like. But more so as the woman, as the person going through it, like how dare she abandon this conventional model of success for something so feminine and below her?
That's a very good question. It's like, what is the motivation to actually do it?
And how do you, you know, get through, you know, people are thinking that. Let's put it that way. You know, people are thinking
that. Not only were they thinking that, they told me.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. I'm sure people said it.
No, I totally told a couple of friends, and one of them specifically said, like, Sarah, I don't think you should switch. You have a PhD, worked hard for it.
Yeah.
And then my mom, I told her, and she said, she said, you're going to throw away your PhD. You're a doctor now. I'm like, Mom, I'm always going to have my PhD.
Yeah.
I'm not throwing it away.
Yeah, you don't forfeit it.
No, I don't forfeit it. It's going to be permanently on my record, whether I like it or not.
Yeah.
First tried to have a job in the fashion, after fashion school. I thought I should go to retail. So I went for an interview at Express. It doesn't exist anymore, right?
Is this an American thing?
No, it does not exist. That is, you are in deep millennial America right now.
Oh my gosh, this is why I'm sorry.
Express equals life. I wish I knew the British equivalent to make this so relevant, but Express is like you shop there.
Yeah,
that's where everyone, it's like
is
the store
clothes,
that everyone.
Is it clothes?
It's clothes,
girl.
It's clothes.
H&M too.
We're going to do an off-air. First of all, in the show notes, we're going to include a link to Express. No, but
I mean, it's gone now, but
it was the quintessential millennial fashion.
And the men's version was structure.
Yes, structure.
And then the women was.
It's in my soul right now, Sarah. Okay, so you apply to Express.
As a retail person, right?
As a retail assistant.
Yeah.
With your PhD.
So I had to.
I'm dying.
That's what I'm saying. Like on my resume, I actually deleted it. I omitted it. Because I was too overqualified.
They wouldn't hire me. Absolutely not.
Yeah.
I dropped out of school at 16.
Yeah. So I went and then I did a 1 hour like employee video and I quit. I was thinking, well, this is ridiculous. I don't need to go into retail to be in fashion design.
I would say retail is kind of the less glam part of fashion.
I mean, because I thought that would be like my, you know, playing my dues
yes, totally.
Getting the experience. But
it's like washing dishes in the restaurant, right?
Yeah, exactly. But, to become a chef. Yeah. I picked up another job as a fashion show dresser.
Oh,
the
that's
Moth. Okay. Ooh, that sounds fun.
Yeah, especially because my first job was for Guess. Because Guess is in LA.
I know Guess. I do know Guess.
Okay, Guess is relevant. Right? Guess is relevant.
And that event was catered by Wolfgang Puck.
Oh.
He lives in
LA,
too.
This is the most LA event that ever LA'd. Go on.
It was my first job. I had no idea. No one preps you on how to be the dresser. I just kind of lied that I said I know how to do it to get the job.
Yeah.
Okay, by the way, this is kind of a theme in my life. I just kind of lied to get whatever I want. I mean, just fib it, you know, whatever.
Fake it till you make it.
Yeah, hello, she's like,
thank you,
lie to
I did that. It's a fib. I mean, it doesn't hurt anybody. So I went and I told my male model, because this one had male models and female, but I had male model. And he, like, we got along so well, he proposed to me.
That's insane.
Wow. But I was like,
it wasn't Dean, was it?
No.
What's the plot twist again?
And I was like, no, I'm married. And then I was like, this is my first day. And he's like, really? And then so you're supposed to have a first look and then second look.
Right.
But I put him in the second look first because I didn't know that there was a sequence.
Oh, tragedy.
And so he went to the stylist and got sent back. And he's like, oh, it really is your first day. And I was like, okay, take off your clothes and give it to me. Yeah. But the fashion thing, I think like the transition.
Yeah, exactly. How do you manage that transition?
To be honest, I think something in you knows that this is your truest self.
Yeah.
The other popular story online that you'll see is that my brother got into a motorcycle accident. Mm-hmm. He was riding Sunset Boulevard in LA. It's very squiggly. Before nightfall, they come back home, but then he hit an unmarked pothole and lost control of his motorcycle and went to the other side of the road. An oncoming SUV, his head slammed into the, but it was helmeted.
Oh, thank God.
And as a neuroscientist who actually studies spinal cord injuries and paralysis, I gave him a spine guard because I knew he wouldn't tell my parents that he had a motorcycle, but I bought him that. because he told me. Yeah. And then so he was sent to UCLA. He had 8-hour surgery. We didn't know he was going to live. I was in Chicago as a postdoc in Northwestern University. I flew over and I didn't know he was going to be alive or not. Next 2 years, I'm his caregiver. I'm his decision maker. I signed the power of attorney.
Wow.
Because my parents don't speak the English, like the medical English yeah. that I do. Some of the clinical trials were done by my PhD committee members.
Yeah.
One of them came in, the professor came in and was like, Sarah, what are you doing here? He's like, oh, is this your brother?
Oh.
I was like, yeah. So, and his head was the size of a watermelon.
Oh my goodness.
So you take out a part of the bone so that the swelling of the brain can have some space. Otherwise, it'll continually
push
and it'll become a contusion, a bruise.
Oh my God.
And it'll further do brain damage. Anyway, that was 2 years. And actually after that, I said, nope, I'm going to live my life and what I wanted. Mm-hmm. I want to be a fashion designer. Why? Because I was obsessed with clothes. And most obsessions as adults come from a place of deprivation, maybe mm-hmm. from childhood. My dad was in the U.S. Army. They immigrated from Korea to mm-hmm. the States. We didn't have much money. They mm-hmm. always said, save, save, save. Never got to buy anything. Yeah. All my clothes were hand-me-downs from cousins in New York. So as an adult, I was obsessed with clothes.
Yeah.
And I was very good at drawing. So then I translated the drawing and the art skills into fashion because I wanted it to be something that was actually lucrative,
yeah,
something that I can make money with.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went to FITM with a bunch of 17-year-olds mm-hmm. in high-heeled shoes, and we go to industrial sewing class. And industrial sewing machines are not your typical machines at home. They are a car.
Wow.
When you turn it on, it goes vroom.
Yeah.
And then when you start sewing, it's like,
yeah, I only learned that from Project Runway.
Yeah,
I did
yeah.
not learn that from real life.
But so as I was progressing, I quit because I want to go to Parsons. And because of that, I had all this time and I had no homework to do. So I went on the scholarship page and I submitted a design for this contest called Design the Little Black Dress by Laundrie Siegel.
Uh-huh.
Laundrie Siegel is a big brand back yeah. then, but it's probably gone now too. And so I just drew one and sent it in. I don't want anything. I don't want any contest. Let's just send it in. So I did that. Months later, I'm in Australia with Dean. And I get this email, and I think it's junk. I'm about to delete it. But it was like, oh, you're the grand prize winner.
No way.
Wow.
So then my dress got produced and sold Incredible. At all the majors. Majors called the department stores.
Yeah.
Versus the minors, like the little boutiques. Yeah. So it was at Macy's, Dillard's.
Do those names ring a bell or no?
Macy's,
okay.
yes.
Okay.
But Dillard's is a Texas just, thing.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I think that the New York ones I would know.
Oh, yeah. Nordstrom.
Yes, yeah. I do know. Yes.
Yeah. And it was called the Sarah dress.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So that kind of propelled me into fashion.
Yeah.
Or gave me like confidence.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, though, I had this condo in downtown LA. Right across the street from FITM, my okay. school. I could see it from my living room. So I could roll out of bed and go to school.
Yeah.
I designed it and I loved it so much. I loved interior design. So I was like, huh. So maybe I should apply for interior design in Parsons.
Did you move to New York though? You never
so
did.
So I
right?
prepped everything okay. to go and I gave up my apartment and yeah. didn't go. Yeah.
Because I was going to say, I read your bio yeah, up, down, and no. sideways. I never saw New York in there.
I was trying to go, but I never went.
Mm.
And because in the middle, I went to go work for Kelly Wurstler.
Okay.
She's a famous celebrity interior designer. She does all the Viceroy hotels in the world.
Oh.
She married a hotelier. And working for her, if you think about like a lot of people like minimalist style, she is maximalist.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's gorgeous and opulent and oh my gosh.
Have you been inside a Viceroy?
I haven't. I think actually
it's
I might
beautiful.
Have
beautiful.
Yeah, just the one in Hollywood is like yeah. the one I'm obviously most familiar
there's
with.
There's Hollywood and Amaze. There's one about in Santa Monica. It's gorgeous. Then during that experience was interesting. I learned a lot. The first day, I'm a 29-year-old PhD FITM dropout. And that I lied also on my resume and told them I know how to do CAD. Because interior design, you know how to need to do a CAD, computer-aided design.
Oh, my.
Okay, before I started my first day, My architect friend came over and gave me a 1-hour
tour. I was going to say, did you have to get the book, like CAD for Dummies or something?
Yeah. Exactly. So, but that's all I did to prep for that job. Yeah. So first day, the project manager comes in and she tells me, okay, so you have these two piles. You have this invoice on one side, that's one, and this envelope, that's one. You put it together and you put it here. Then you see invoice two and envelope two and put it together and put it over here. I was like, are you fucking kidding me? Does she know I have a PhD? No, she doesn't. Okay, so then I go and do it 5 minutes and I come back and she gives me another menial job. And I go do it and then I go to the bathroom and I cry because my husband and Dean is in Chicago still because he's a professor there. I left to do this
fucking cheesy job. Yeah.
Yeah, and fashion school and then like delayed it because I can do this internship. Yeah. And then I came back and I was, and then she's like obviously now annoyed because I'm doing it so fast. So she's like, okay, so Cameron wants these bathroom mirrors options. So why don't you give me some couple of options of that on CAD? Yeah. I was like, okay, sure. I run over to my desk and I look at my computer. I'm like, how do I draw a line?
Oh no.
And I'm sweating because I'm like, you can't take too long, right? Because it should be simple.
I was just going to say, it should sound pretty simple to someone who knows what that is.
So I was like, oh my God, control L? I don't know. Okay. So then I did a couple and I brought it over. And she's like, okay, these look good, but she wants it a little bit more intricate. I was like, of course she does. Of course this person does. And, yeah. And I was like, I'm sorry, you talk about Cameron as if I should know this person. And she's like, oh, it's Cameron Diaz.
Oh, my.
I was like, oh, okay. I will be right back.
Yeah, give me a hot minute.
I'll be right back.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so then that same day, I actually got to sit down with Kelly Wurstler and my project manager. She let me sit with her. Usually you don't really talk to the god, you know, the goddess. And like we're designing the walk-in closets of Gwen Stefani.
Oh my God. And that sounds like the dream job. Yeah.
And I look and it was like a whole area for belts, whole area for hats. And
okay, that sounds like a dream closet.
Yeah, I could sleep there. I had these fake black rim glasses. By the way, all my glasses, I don't need glasses. I have 20/20 vision. Yeah. Don't hate me.
But go on.
And then I just wear this for fashion. So I wore these black rim glasses and she was like, she took it off and she was like, oh, I like this. And I'm like, you look good in it.
Yeah, did she keep them?
No. Okay. If she wanted it, I would.
I was going to say, I was like, that's very cool.
I think I actually bought them from Daiso.
Be like, they're yours now. They're really high end.
Yeah. So I gave it to her. But yeah, that was my first day. I mean, honestly, I feel like in life for me, I wasn't scared. People ask about the pivot.
Yeah.
But honestly, like, I don't know what it is about me, but I just jump in. Like in high school, you're talking about other moments of pivot. In high school, I didn't know how to play soccer, but in high school, I really wanted to. Huh?
Football.
Yeah, she's translating for the British listeners.
And my son actually says football, and we argue about that.
Yeah, I was gonna say, is it a stake in your heart every time? Because it would be mine.
I'm like,
okay.
You're an American boy.
Yeah. I say these
that's
guys.
A sport soccer. That exists, and it's better. So, you know.
I do actually say to my boys, whenever they have an Americanism, I'm like, we're English.
Yeah. reminding them. Like in high school, so I didn't know how to play soccer, but I just tried out for the JV team. I was a freshman. I didn't get into the JV team.
Okay, what's JV? Sorry, that's another
junior varsity.
Okay,
it's like the entry level team.
So there's two levels. Yeah, JV and varsity. Yeah. So I was like 14, right? And then I was like, okay, whatever, it makes sense because I don't know how to play soccer, right? But then they decided to make two JV teams. So then I was like, they're like everybody comes. So this time I took my mom to Itaewon in Korea, Seoul. Mm-hmm. And got the shin guards, the socks, the shoes, and to get all the proper equipment. And then I showed up. And by the end of the season, because I worked my ass off, maybe there's some inner drive in me, I got invited to be on the varsity team.
Wow. Yay!
As a freshman.
Wow.
And then the next year, I tried out and got to be varsity. So that's my first story. And I tell my kids about this too, like try.
Yeah. Work hard.
Yeah.
If you're driven enough, you can get what you want.
Yeah. I think honestly, Sarah, you know, Jasmine said it previously, and it's like, you are the epitome of fake it till you make it. And while, by the way, you know, sometimes that will backfire to a small extent. Yes, so your example with the CAD, right? It's like you didn't really have that skill. But in the end, you were actually able to make it work, right? Yeah, you were able to make it happen. And then if you look retrospectively back at that, had you gone to school for 2 years to learn CAD, it wouldn't have changed the outcome
that much.
And I think that that's the story that women need to really grasp onto is, you know, what is the opposite of imposter syndrome? It is Dr. Sarah Namian, okay? It's like, you know, like I am fully an imposter, but I won't be once I am in this world, right? Yeah, it's like, so once I step into this world, then in fact, I can master it. And I think that is such a powerful message that it doesn't have to be the other way around. You don't have to earn it every single time. You can actually learn it.
I think most things, if you're passionate about it, you can learn on the job.
Yeah.
And you can master it.
Yeah.
If your obsession is that, you will learn everything about it. If that brings you joy, you will remember. And that's how schools are called.
Reggio Emilia.
Yeah, yep. And that's the school that I picked for my kids because it's joy-based.
Yeah.
Oh, and you don't have to memorize because if you had the joy of baking chocolate chip cookies, you don't have to look at the recipe. You remember it.
You're so right. It's like when I was a personal trainer and people were like, how do you remember all the different workouts for all the different clients? And I was like, because I don't even have to think about it. I just know what they need.
It's
and
not
it
brings, a struggle for
no,
you.
No, it's not at all. Like it's not an issue of remembering because it's already there.
Exactly.
It's like in your soul.
Then you look at the patient and you're like, oh, or your client and be like, oh, they're struggling here. And then you know the exercise to help that.
Correct. And it's like, it's
just
in
flows.
You.
It flows. In you. Yeah.
No. And even when you do qualify with whatever you're doing, at no point in time while I was doing my degree or my studies, did I ever use what I learned while I was working?
It
was it was completely different. I was like, I just spent like 4 years at university, but never used any of it.
I tell people like in undergrad I didn't learn anything. My grades were kind of bad.
Yeah.
And then grad school, I kind of figured out how actually studying works.
Yeah.
And then, by the way, in grad school, I was a cadaver teacher with like human bodies for pre-med students.
Oh,
anyways, on my second pivot story though, or kind of a crazy story is, I don't know how to swim.
Okay. Oh God.
And I wanted to become a lifeguard.
Wow. Okay.
Because I was at the pool every day in the summer to get a tan because that made you look thinner at the
time. This is in LA, right?
This was in Korea.
Oh, this is in Korea? Seoul. Oh, okay. Yeah. Wow.
I was like, well, if I'm at the pool every day during the summer, I want to make money doing it, you know? So I was like, maybe I'll become a lifeguard. And so in Korea, on base or the school, they had American Red Cross had a CPR and lifeguard training. So I did it. The swimming part, the requirement was you just need to get from one side of the pool to the other.
Yes.
Easy.
I remember that because I went through lifeguard training.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
But you probably swam.
I mean, I was a pretty decent swimmer.
I walked across in the shallow end. And they gave it to me.
Wow.
I'm a good test taker.
They were desperate for lifeguards, and that is the letter of the law. So the other side.
Yeah. So I took that and then went to Texas because my dad was then stationed in Texas. And I wanted to be a lifeguard in the summer. So I applied there. I interviewed very well with this woman named Leslie. She's lovely, very tall. And I'm very professional. You know, I'm a 16-year-old talking very professionally. Yeah. So she hires me on the spot. I was like, great.
Wow.
She's like, okay, she'll show up in a week for the training class or, you know, the groups. You can meet the other lifeguards. I was like, great. I showed up. First exercise is a 1,500-meter swim.
Oh, no.
Under 15 minutes.
Oh, gosh.
The whistle goes and everyone starts. Yeah. They all gracefully dive in and then they swim freestyle, right? For me, I plop in. I have no cap. I have no goggles. I plop in, and I don't know what I'm doing, but in the end, everyone's done, and I finish later elementary backstroke. You know what that is? That's not even backstroke. Yeah. It's this.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. It's like waving yourself through
the
water.
You're like a squid.
Yes.
I got across.
But again, you made it.
I came out,
yeah,
and she stared down at me like towering height, and she goes, Sarah. I'm like, oh, shit. But I wasn't even scared. She was just like, she didn't get mad. She was just like, you're coming in every day. You have no bathroom duties. You're swimming.
Yeah.
You're swimming every day. I was like, okay. So by the end of the summer, I was the second fastest on that team.
Wow.
And then they asked me to become on the lifeguard team.
Yeah.
Our first contest with Hurricane Harbor. It's kind of like Wet Wet Wild here.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Anyway, so that's my amazing other story, yeah, of
trying literally to just jump in the deep end and learn how to swim.
Yeah. Oh man. Sink or swim, right? Yeah.
Well, girl, we are coming into our last minute on the podcast. So I want to ask you the question that we ask every single guest sitting in this chair.
Right.
In, you know, 1 to 2 sentences, what is your 40s formula? What do you tell women that are looking to thrive in this decade?
Yeah, and I think about that a lot. Mm. And for me, with every day, my mantra is I look for the light. Mm. I look towards the light. And the light means positive thoughts. And I never say bad things about people. Why dirty your own energy? Mm. Just stay positive. Love. Mm. Love for everyone. You look great. You look beautiful. Oh, wow, thank you so much. You know, like, hold the door open. Kindness. Yeah. Honestly, it spreads and then multiplies. And it's not that hard to do. Mm-hmm. I've been to the darkest place, but to be in the bright, it's better. Mm. To be in the light is better.
You said it, girl.
Like you said earlier, it's simple.
Yeah.
Eat right, or eat what you need. Exercise, move your body. Moving your body is definitely a need.
Yeah.
In the 40s, which I just kind of took for granted in my 30s and 20s. But honestly, it's just to keep positive.
Yeah, seek the light.
Seek the light. I know it just sounds a little woo-woo, but it's honestly just the best. And it will change your life if you practice it.
It works, girl. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for being with us today and sharing your story so candidly, Sarah. We really appreciate it. Thank you.
Guys, you know we love coffee. And if you want to show us some love, you know you can always get us one.
Just visit buymeacoffee.com/the40s formula.
Cheers.
Before we go, please remember to hit subscribe and take a moment to support the 40s formula by leaving a review on your favorite podcast platform.
Your reviews will help us to reach more people and allow us to continue to bring valuable content. It should only take a moment, and it's a free way for you to support the show.
You can also stay updated with the 40s formula by following us on Instagram at the 40s formula, all one word. We share behind-the-scenes insights, episode updates, and much more, so please be sure to hit that follow button.
We appreciate your time and support. Thank you for being part of this community, and we'll be back next week for more empowering conversations with inspiring guests.
Bye. Bye.
It is a burger place from the heavens.
Okay.
They put a slab of butter on the burger.
Oh,
and
it's
called
it
a butter burger. Yes, girl. And they have a normal one, too.
No, it's new juicy. It's a new baru. I'm not wearing it. So he's going to go and get it and bring it home.
Oh, okay.
Because I want to eat the greasy burger in sweat.
Yes.
So I'm not going to be looking like this at home.
I'm really now hungry. Like, it literally just hit it for me.
I do have to say, I did hear your stomach rumble.
Yeah. No, like, it just, like, encompassed my need for food. I will eat my snacks after this.